Winston City Council, April 17th, 7 o'clock p.m.
I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Roll call. Councilor White is excused tonight. Councilor Cunningham.
Here.
Councilor Hobson.
Here.
Councilor Anderson.
Here.
And I'm here, so that takes care of that little detail. Adjustments to the agenda, Mr. McIntosh.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, we have one adjustment to the agenda. We will be adding an item 7E, that's under new business, letter E, the presentation for the award for Patrick Wright, Officer Patrick Wright.
Okay. Thank you very much. Consent agenda, approval of the council minutes for the April 3rd, 2023 workshop and the April 3rd, 2023 regular meeting. Any adjustments to those minutes?
Yes, there is one. We had a vote at the end of the regular meeting to approve me for the liaison to the LPSCC. We need to make sure we have that on the minutes.
Got that taken care of, Cindy?
You bet.
Thank you very much. So without being done, let's call for a motion to approve the minutes.
Move the minutes being approved with that adjustment.
I have a motion. Looking for a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you. Acceptance of committee minutes. Economic Development, April 12th. Thomas, you got that? Or are you going to discuss that, or are we just going to accept them?
That's the discussion on that is the next section, boards, commissions, committees, schools.
So we need a motion to accept the minutes from that meeting.
I make a motion that we accept them.
Motion. Looking for a second?
I second.
Second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Thank you very much. Comments from the audience. Anyone wishing to discuss items not covered on this agenda are welcome to address the city council as a whole. Please state your name and address for the record. Each speaker will be given a maximum of 3 minutes. Speakers may not defame, intimidate, or use profanity or personal affronts. The council reserves the right to delay action until they have full information on the issue. Would anyone like to speak to council?
Yes.
Your name and address, please.
My name is Philip Morton. I live at 521 Northwest Barber Boulevard here in Winston.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm here tonight to address you folks with a thought and idea I've had for the community, and I would like you to take your time and look and consider starting community gardens here in Winston. I think there's a need for it. I think there's some underserved folks who would benefit from being able to have a place to grow fresh fruits and vegetables, you know, with movement to eat all fresh food and all that. And that's a passion of mine. It's just something that I'd like to get that in your heads. I don't expect a decision to be made tonight, but I'd just like to have you start considering that. There's several places around town that I'm not sure who owns the land, but somebody mows it. So I think it would be better to use land to grow than to mow.
Good point. So, a lot of the stuff that's mowed is mowed by everybody. I'm not going to get into that.
And I think one of the few requirements other than if the city has land they could donate to this cause, it would need water. And other than that, I'm pretty sure that I can come up with all the other materials that we need to get this going.
Okay, how soon do you think you ought to start this project?
Tomorrow.
And yet you didn't want a decision today.
Well, those are two different things. It would be, I know we're, gardening season is about to begin if Mother Nature ever cooperates, but the sooner the better.
Okay.
I mean, that's.
Perfect, thank you. Just a moment, please. Thomas, do you have any possibilities, maybe, we can think about?
Yeah, I would say two things, Mr. Mayor, thank you, and appreciate those. thoughts in that regard. It would really depend on if the request is to take a look at city-owned property or private property, pull something like that together. If it's city-owned property, we really got to do an analysis to figure out where something like that would. At first glance, I would struggle to think of any properties that the city is in the city's ownership, and that doesn't mean that there isn't a suitable space. But we would definitely have to do an analysis to figure out where somewhere like that would be suitable.
Well, in Thomas's free time, we'll get him on that.
All right, thank you.
Phil, thank you very much. Appreciate that.
That's a good idea.
That's a great idea. Anybody else like to speak to council? Okay. Board reports, boards, commissions, committees, and schools. Economic development. Mr. McIntosh, what do you got for us?
Thank you, Mayor, members of council, members of the audience. Just real quick for you, the economic development minutes are in your packet. Just kind of broad strokes on that. They did have a guest speaker from Southwest Workforce Investments, Amy Taylor. She kind of presented the different programs, resources available to help the committee in their decision-making. There was a brief community development report where some urban renewal grants were discussed and some of the ongoing city projects, the opening or the commencement of the opening of the DC Co-op, which a lot of us were anticipating, a lot of the community anticipating that it was fully opened. And there was a brief report given on the events, the upcoming events, the two main ones, the Wine Walk and the Oktoberfest. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. McIntosh?
Thomas, so ODOT is still thinking about a roundabout at Brockway?
They are. That is really planned in their 2024-25 STIP plan. So they are currently right now contemplating engineering and orchestrating engineering on that. Unless it could change, it could be property owner driven, if there's a development that is put forward or proposed in that area or adjacent to that area, that development could be placed on kind of the shoulders of the development project.
Okay, anything else for Thomas? Thank you, Thomas. Park Board, Alicia, what do you got?
Okay, we had a representative from the Southern Oregon Blues Festival, and they realized there was a scheduling conflict on July 14th, because that's also a date for Riverbend Live. So they came to an agreement that the Blues Festival would be done by 6 and Riverbend Live would start by 7. So you can get a 2-for-1 that day on July 14th. They also are still in discussions on the storage at the Riverbend Live location. Still trying to work that out, details. And then we also had a request from Riverbend Live about hanging flags on the poles on Main Street. But we recommended that a representative come to the city council for approval on that. That's
it. Thank you. Any questions for Alicia? Department reports. Mr. Sherlock.
Yes.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Been a while?
Yeah. So our flow and load study came back from Corello. They looked at data from 2014 on to really determine where the plant's at in terms of its capacity. So in the packet is kind of some flow data along with some percentages of certain aspects of the plant. It looks ominous just staring at it, because there's some really big numbers above 100% there. A couple of those weren't a surprise to us. So at the top where we have our screens and grit removal, we know that's a bottleneck to the plant. We know it's small. We're making do with what it is. Moving farther down, our disinfection process. That's one of those things that, you know, the math says we shouldn't be able to do what we do, but we are. So we add our chlorine a little farther up in the process, get some more mixing time, more contact time, and we're still able to get the E. coli kills that we need. And then primary clarifiers, there's a lot of aerobic systems that don't have primary clarification. Ours does, so it's a bonus in that aspect. Could it be more efficient? Yes. Is it sufficient? More likely. Really, where we get down to is our secondary process. So you look at our BOD and CBOD loads on the plant. We knew we were getting close. We didn't think we were over by that much. I will say, from a operational standpoint of the plant, it doesn't feel as though we're pushing it that hard. So. Is it time to address it? Yeah. You know, before you're not making permit.
Well, we don't even have to worry about a permit, huh? Because we're not permitted now, are we?
We're operating under the existing permit that expired in 2010.
In 2010?
Yep.
And so, why are we still dealing with that one?
Because our permit hasn't been renewed. So DEQ got extremely backlogged. There was some legal matters that caused that, and now they're trying to get through renewing permits all throughout Oregon. It's a slow process. So
where does that leave us?
Currently,
50% of the problem is ours.
Yeah, technically. We're slated for 2027 to have our permit renewed, which doesn't address the capacity issues that this has in it.
So what do we have to, we're not going to qualify for permit, that's what you're saying.
We don't necessarily know what where the goal line's going to be. So it's going to change.
Didn't DEQ change their permitting process anyway? Didn't they kind of change their goalposts to a certain extent?
Every time a permit's renewed, the goals are changed. So we have someone that all the wastewater plants, they have their local guy that they work with. Usually it's a regional rep. How they're renewing permits now is it's all at the state level up in Portland. So they tried to make it more cut and dry. The problem is every single plant is different. Just like with our disinfection right here. You know, it shows we're at 173% of capacity, which, if, you know.
It's kind of tough to do, isn't it?
It is, yep. And we still make permit consistently, so.
So, how are we going to qualify for this bill?
So this flow and load study is kind of the cornerstone to a whole phase upgrade for the plant. They go through, they look at data, they identify bottlenecks either hydraulically or just load-wise on the plant. And then the next part is a plant profile that they do. And that goes much more in depth in these problem areas, and determine why that's a problem. You know, is it hydraulically, so just flow-based? Are we having a load-based problem? Is it a problem with, you know, just the age of the equipment?
So the numbers you were talking about earlier, with the INI increase from the leaky system we have, is that driving some of those numbers up?
That's going to drive some of your peak numbers up. Yeah. But, I mean, you'll never get rid of INI in a system. Ever.
I get that.
You know,
but we need to mitigate it as best we can.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Sherlock. Any questions for Chris?
I should note, too, ever since snow got the pump station got put in place,
Winston's been hammering us on and on and on and off with their pumps. It's very hard to treat inconsistent flow. And so we worked with Andy. Andy actually got a hold of TAG. He had TAG come in, and they updated a bunch of the PLC programming there just a month ago or so, and it's been night and day. So it's hopeful going into summer, having a nice steady flow.
But isn't there a... There's another lift station after snow.
Mm-hmm. So if
so
one
was that,
the other,
that was
the
that being gonna... overworked as well then, or
say again?
Was that being overworked? Is that what you're pumping too much from snow in peaks and valleys?
Mm-hmm.
Is that just carrying on down the line to to Park and Well?
To the next one, and then it hammers us.
Okay, so that's been kind of fixed, you said.
At least by 85-90%. So.
Okay, so you're happier then?
Yeah.
Okay. So Andy gets an attaboy?
Andy gets an attaboy.
Well, also I'll add to the mayor, when we did the seismic evaluation, we looked at that surge basin that was on that. Through that process of looking at the plant and the dynamics, it was pretty well, we weren't going to have enough real estate to put a surge basin in. So we kind of kicked the ball around a little bit and decided we will look at do some flow controls at our stations to see if we can level this flow out, get the smoothing of the flow. And this will be step one. We'll have a few more steps to go forward. But step one, we're pretty happy with that.
Good.
With the result.
Awesome.
I have a question. Why would snow, that new station, was when it went in, was that, did that start causing a problem? Why would that be the case?
I know engineers and DEQ in general like to plan and build stuff for the future. However, usually it ends up too big for the current.
Oh, okay.
And that's what happened there.
So the old snow pump station was a below ground, a wet well, dry well, mm-hmm. with some old hydromatic pumps that were very inefficient, that were doing a couple hundred gallons a minute, and it was in a bubbler system, very couple feet of play. This new system, that was an 8-foot diameter wet well. The new ones, it was a 10-foot with the triplex. There's 330 horse pumps in there. And so that's some of the stuff you're getting now, because we had to meet the minimum velocities for a force main to keep that hydrogen sulfide. So as part of the design, the other part of that is anything you do affects, right? It's so, and that's what it is, kind of getting a handle on it. So.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Chris. Anything else?
Yes, if I could. Just happened last week, so it wasn't in any of the weeklies. But we had our backup blowers for our aeration system go down. So they are original to the plant. We replaced one in 2014, I believe. And it's worked flawlessly ever since. We took it offline to do some maintenance to it and discovered that the old ones weren't putting out the pressure or the CFM needed to operate our aerobic system. So we're looking at options for the summer.
So in other words, your Christmas list is growing.
Well, we can't operate without a backup.
I get that.
So,
but your Christmas list is getting bigger.
Yeah.
And it is budget season for all those of you on the budget committee.
It is budget season. We're looking at rebuilding the old ones, you know, which are 45 years old, getting a new one altogether, or possibly even paying to have a rental sit there for the summer.
What's the estimated cost of replacing it?
Don't know yet. We're getting numbers back for
so
all of them.
So you have nothing? Okay.
Chris, have we done any improvements? I know we budgeted for some things. Did we do all of those that were in the budget?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, everything.
I don't remember the specific things, but I just didn't know if that would help with some of these numbers. But I know it's the system overall.
Right.
That needs help. But
this last budget year, we budgeted for a actuator that was going to go on the aeration basin, which has still yet to show up because of supply issues. But that was going to help mainly in the August-September months when the oxygen demand was the highest. And it was going to try to give us a little more life out of that one newer blower.
So hopefully we get it this August.
There was one project on there, Mayor and Council, to rehab or working on the wet well. Some of that funding, that line item, actually had to be used for the capacity study. So found it prudent to redirect the monies that direction just to get a good idea. Some of that information, obviously, based on what Chris is saying, has came in tonight that's showing up. Another difficult situation.
None of it's easy. Anything else, sir?
I got tons of bad news, but we can just keep it there.
I got all night.
No, we're good.
Hey, he's getting the attaboys. You're getting the off shits.
I know. I'm due. So.
You show up more often, it wouldn't be this hard for you.
Right.
Any other questions for Chris? Okay, thank you, sir. Chief, what do you got?
Good morning, or good afternoon, I guess. I don't even know what the day it is now. Good afternoon, Council. I just wanted to give you kind of a quick update. I went to the Chief's Conference last week. I don't have local bad news. The police department front is superb. No issues, just so you know. We've had our ear full today. But that being said, is I do have bad news at the local or at the state level. I went to several different committee meetings. They're bringing up Measure 110 again, which they figured is not working well. Go figure.
Third grader going to
figure that out. So they're going to be discussing that at state legislators on the floor. They're also going to be discussing Measure 114, the gun issue. They're asking all the agencies to be prepared to basically fill all these unfunded mandates. I talked to the manager about it a little bit. We're not really moving forward on it. We're going to see what happens to, you know, and go from there. I mean, I don't really know what we can do. We got the equipment to help assist on this Measure 114, but I kind of want to see if maybe we might refer that to the sheriff and let them do it, but that'll also come with a cost if we do that. So that being said, that's all I have. The committee meetings were actually very entertaining, and there was a lot of good stuff that came out of them. A lot of the bills that were anti-police and trying to, in my opinion, anti-police and trying to dismantle us, have failed because they didn't go any farther. So some of them were going to be brought back up. One of them for the school resource officers, they're readdressing that issue. They don't want school districts to have the funding to fund law enforcement, which I think is a big mistake. I actually reached out. We had a meeting. I don't know if everyone remembers when we had the swatting calls at all the schools going up I-5, when they actually hit all of Oregon from the California line all the way north. They also, the next day, hit Colorado, hit Utah. So this individual, the FBI was working on it. We worked with the sheriff and the feds, and we found out that this guy was actually from New York. So this individual was doing it from New York. That being said, I really want to push trying to make sure that we keep our funding in our schools for our law enforcement. We had a meeting with all the superintendents throughout the school district, and I'm talking throughout Douglas County at the sheriff's office a couple weeks ago, and it was interesting to have all those educators in one room, so I had to throw that out there to them in regards to the measure they're trying to put on the floor to cancel SROs. So I just thought that was important. But anyways, any questions?
Perfect. Hey, have a thought. What's the condition of the police cars? Are we good shape on them? Do we need
We didn't order cars last year. We're due to order. I put in the budget for one patrol car and one patrol pickup to replace the 2001 Dodge that we have and a 2014 Chevy.
Okay. So we'll just kind of see where we go from there.
Yeah,
those funds are in the public safety fund, right?
That's in the public safety fund. Perfect. Yeah, that's correct.
Perfect.
That's the normal rotation, isn't it?
Yeah, this is actually going to be our first phase of actually getting onto that rotation since we started it. Yes. So I'll replace. I have a 2001 Dodge. The pickup's the Dodge, and it's a 2001. So we're planning on replacing that, and then I have three 2014 Caprices still. And so the white one that used to be mine is going to go to my my spare car, in a sense. It's an unmarked for other activity car. So that's where that one's going. Other activity, yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, we got a plan.
Yep. It's all on plan.
Perfect.
That it?
That's all I got. Anything else for Chief?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. McIntosh, Community Development and Planning, what do you got, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council, members.
Can we get a microphone for Thomas, please?
Yeah, thank you. I thought I was speaking loud enough, but we'll try to project. Is that a little better?
Better, thank you.
So a couple things for you, and I wanted to throw up some visual aids just to kind of help orchestrate a point. So if you can recall, sometime back, we were, and I don't know if this will come up or not, I should have planned this part of it a little better, but the Safari Estates housing project progress. There's a number of houses up there. I'm sure all of you have driven up there. There's a number of houses that have just been sitting. They're not completed. You might drive up there and you might think, what's the deal with that? So the properties essentially went through a foreclosure process, went through a very malicious litigation process. They got through all of that. And then on the other end, they were still kind of sitting, not anything happening. So the city engaged in conversations with the property owners in terms of utilizing what resources we have to help them along. Help them along and get finished. So what we found out was that they have probably about $4.5 million sitting in a fund to help finish them after the litigation. So this is kind of what you see before, and I do not want anyone to fall asleep, but just so you can see it a little better. Everyone see that pretty well?
Yeah.
This is essentially what you're seeing up there. That's just kind of a normal product, and that's been the way for more than 4 years, almost 5 years. So with a little bit of poking and prodding and threatening nuisance ordinance violations, right, using the tools from the city, this is more what you're seeing now in terms of requesting finals, meaning the property owners are requesting a final certificate of occupancy from the county. We're all finished. This is about six of these that are coming down the pike, mostly on the Will Way area. You're still, the larger ones that you see on Brockway around the corner, they're still there. And, you know, there's still a process that we're trying to go through. But it does foster a lot of optimism that we're finally seeing some results in terms of improving that area, you know, helping those along. So just wanted to share that. It's been a long time coming in terms of the success story over there. Any questions on that? All right, so I wanted to fill the council in on a couple other things. Of course, all of you have been privy to the CORE project. That's been ongoing, and the CORE project, meaning over by the Cheetah Junction, the little outlets there where the loggers went in, it's went through a very drastic process. You know, development started, they were moving things along, found 10,000 gallon gas tanks in the ground, not anticipated. Those were removed, filtered, mitigated, all those types of things. So the reason I bring it to council is there's been some URA involvement, there's been some funding, there's been a lot of things, a lot of assistance in that regard. So we had a meeting this past week with Douglas County Public Works and the property management, who is now the previous mayor, Sharon Harrison, and one other individual. The reason we met with Douglas County Public Works is because their storm system is who the project is hooking into in terms of drainage. So the water comes down, where is it going in terms of collection, conveyance, putting into the system. So we were able to, you know, kind of iron out, okay, where is it? Because it started with a contracting group and an engineering group, and now it has a different set of both of those. And it's been kind of months since we've seen any level of activity, and you know, there hasn't been a whole lot of progress in that regard. However, we're able to kind of iron out what their plan was. So you can see here, and I don't have a pointer, but you can see that there's a 1,000-gallon tank going in, and then there's an inlet to the north is 99, right, where the county system is. And then you're going to see dark lines in terms of 8-inch pipes. This kind of projects the conveyance system and what their plan is. So this has been reviewed now and approved by the county to hook into their system. So now what the county says is, all right, property owners, go out and install that exactly like you proposed. Part of the problem is the previous contractors, they did some element of work. Nobody knows what. They may have put a tank in there of some kind, a 1,000-gallon tank. There's a pumping system, submersible pumping system that goes along with this too. So what the city needs to see and what the county needs to see is a new set of plans that illustrates as-built. Like, what did you do in order to sign off on this? The reason I share this with you is this is probably the biggest barrier yet still, other than the landscaping, in order to conclude and finish the project. This is kind of the only thing standing in their way in that regard. So since the engagement of the city has kind of been very intricate, just wanted to provide you with an update in terms of where they are with their storm collection system and the installation of it. Any questions on the progress there? I'm going to put this back on and wake you all folks up.
When do they expect a resolution?
So I talked to Sharon Harrison earlier today, and the response that I got is that they are not necessarily satisfied with this engineering plan. They're not satisfied with the pumping elements of it. So they're going to go back to the engineer and just kind of identify if tweaks need to happen, those types of things, which they're allowed to do under the permit. They just need to, but if they propose something new, we need to review that and approve that. That's how the process is typically going to work. So that's the latest as of today, the update that we have received.
So we don't know exactly when there will be a resolution.
No, they're still operating under permit, and they have full volition to extend their permit as long as there's some method of progress taking place. And I would say, based on our conversation with the county, it would probably be prudent to place some type of timetable. But the storm is there. That's their decision. It's connecting to their system on 99.
Anything else, Thomas?
Yep, I apologize. I don't mean to monopolize your time, but there is there's one more project that I'd like to share with you. During this meeting with DC Public Works, they clued us in that they're actually in an ongoing bidding process that concluded on April 12th for a granite inlay, a 4-inch, on 99 going all the way to Dole Road. And it's anticipated they'd like it complete by June 31st or June 30th. We didn't know about that. I didn't know about that, at any rate. So that was a little bit of a surprise, if you will. You can see based on this map where it starts all the way up Douglas by the Cheetah Junction where they take jurisdiction, and it goes all the way down. There's a better, there's going to be a better map a little bit down here. Right here is kind of what covers our jurisdiction, the top being the Cheetah Junction all the way on the left, where 42 and 99 kind of branch off. And then it goes all the way down, the bottom being where it leaves our jurisdiction to the south. So, significant project, been bidded out, bids were concluded. There was only one bidder that put in for a bid, and that was Knife River. They're set to get the award on the 26th of this month, so far as we know. The bid letter is going to be placed before the Board of Commissioners. So
they're not going to repair the base, they're just going to grind an overlay.
Yeah, here's essentially aggregate base with an inlay, overlay, done. Okay. So with your typical fabric put underneath the aggregate base, what you typically see with a road like this for capacity.
So they're going all the way to the, okay, so they are going to repair the base then?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
It's a full grind and inlay project that goes a pretty significant distance. So this was anticipated based on the engineer analysis to be $4.3 million. It was bidded out by Knife River and approved for $3.5 million. So there may be a contingency written in there, but that's just what the bid documents dictate. So since this affects the city in a significant regard, I assume that it would be prudent for us to discuss.
When does it start?
We don't have a timetable for start, but the award letter will go before the Board of Commissioners on the 26th at their meeting then. And there isn't any reason why Knife River wouldn't be awarded that. And then they can, there would be a notice to proceed shortly after that. There's a very short window on when they want this completed. June 30th is a very quick turnaround for a project like this. That concludes my report.
Any questions for Thomas? Thank you, sir. Mr. Bowers no longer here. New business licenses, Bodacious Bricks, which in reading, it looks like it's about Legos. My grandkids will be happy. And All About Cable and Fiber, LLC, Cindy Schoening. Any questions, Chief? Are these all okay?
Yes, sir.
Looking for a motion to approve the new business licenses?
I make a motion to approve the new business licenses.
Looking for a second, please?
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you. Set council workshop dates if necessary. We good on that for a bit?
Yeah. There may be another workshop date that the council feels necessary after the completion of the meeting tonight. We can revisit that if you'd like.
Okay. We'll take a look a little bit later. Thank you. Request for appointments and reappointments for the Planning Commission, Traffic Public Safety, and Budget Committee. There's quite a list of volunteers here, which I think is awesome. So for the Planning Commission, Michael DeRusto? DeRusha? Mm-hmm. I can't understand. Okay. Traffic and Public Safety, Judy Ode. Chad Myers for Traffic and Public Safety. Susan Friedberger for the Budget Committee. On a resume. And then Cynthia Eastburn for the Budget Committee as well. And then also one that was over here, William Boswell for the Budget Committee. Any questions on any of these applicants? Looking for a motion to approve?
So moved.
I have a motion to approve. Looking for a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same side. Thank you very much.
I got one question, Thomas. Is this still out of our Budget Committee?
I think we still do have vacancies.
Really?
In every regard, except for on the budget committee.
The Budget Committee is now full.
Great, it's now full.
Okay,
so we got a full crew.
And that starts up right away.
Okay, next item on the agenda would be an introduction to the proposed ordinance number 23-712, amending the municipal code regarding prohibited camping in public places. This ordinance at this juncture is a collection of Mr. McIntosh's, Mr. Bowers' thoughts on the ordinance and an attempt to qualify with the state requirements. Mr. McIntosh, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, members of the audience. I'd like to rehash just for a second a couple of bullet points we went over in the previous workshop. So, by way of information, this is just an introduction. This is essentially not a reading. It's not we are essentially just discussing the elements of this draft ordinance. And essentially, you know, a couple of things we went over in the last workshop is there's been state legislation that's passed, that's enforced July 1st of this year, that really require us to look at the situation as it relates to homelessness in public spaces, public home spaces. So as a consequence of that, if there is a situation to where someone may not have any other resource in terms of overnight stay, they are still allowed to have a place to stay to where they can make reasonable amenities for themselves to stay dry and warm. That's the crux of the state legislation that's passed, and that's House Bill 3115, if anybody would like to research. I'd also like to announce that we have the slideshow we did in the last workshop is on the website, and there's some very crucial information in there in terms of the bill up here, and what a lot of cities are doing, incorporated areas are doing on the subject prior to things changing on July 1. So what we're going to go through today is just kind of what a draft ordinance would look like. So ordinance number 23-712, which essentially looks at our camping ordinance. Our camping ordinance previously prohibited any kind of camping that took place on public property without a permit from the city, essentially, which is runs in concert with what a lot of ordinances stated previous to these bills coming out. So I've highlighted in yellow, there are a number of definitions. So this is going to roll right into essentially section or chapter 90.90 of our Winston Municipal Code. And it's first going to look at definitions in that regard. So the first one is camp, and the reason you see a definition there is, what does a campsite mean? Well, in order for this to be consistent with the bill, we need a timestamp there. You got to have something. Right now it says 24 hours. So essentially what that would mean is that if we are trying to be consistent with the House bill and the enforcement thereof, then if someone is experiencing the issue of homelessness and they have nowhere else to go, no shelters, no resources, and they have gravitated to a public property, a campsite would mean the duration of 24 hours, no more. In concert with that, we also added, there's a few definitions added here, but it's also imperative to highlight relocate, which means the relocation requirement doesn't allow you to stay on the same city-owned property, but you have to relocate to a differing public property. And then here, we're going to get kind of into the meat and potatoes of the ordinance. Here we're going to look at what the regulations are, what they say. So you're going to see section A removed, and that's the section as it relates to that we're prohibiting any kind of public camping unless you have a permit, which is not consistent with the state law anymore. Instead, you're seeing language added in terms of how time, place, and manner is regulated. Those are the elements that are really regulated in an intricate regard. So, except as expressly authorized by the Winston Municipal Code, at all times it is unlawful to establish, use, or occupy a campsite in the following locations. You're going to see some locations listed here because the analysis shows that there are potential safety threats, right? So if you're camping there, you could have your safety at risk. So all of the public parks are listed. And what I want to do while we're looking at this, while Riverbend Park and Community Park and Civic Wayside Park are highlighted, is I want to gravitate over to a map. The big blue bubbles are 1,000-foot buffers around schools. You're going to see all the schools. So we drew the buffers around there. The red highlighted properties are all city-owned properties that are in the ownership of the city of Winston. The big red and blue swath, well, that's the 100-year and the regulatory floodway, which, as we know, if there's a 100-year floodway, the red area is what the river would become. That's what the river would turn into. And as you can see, it's a detrimental situation. So, essentially, you see some red areas that are by natural volition of these natural features or around these buffer areas can be excluded in that regard. Particularly if you look at the boat marina area, which is kind of your long area there in the middle. That's an area, you know, you're coming back up from the south, past the boat marina, more looks like a travelway stick or whatnot, but that's completely inundated in the floodway, which means floodwaters, high flow frequency. In addition to that, Riverbend Park to the south end is fairly inundated, especially the lower Riverbend Park area. This larger square area up here on the south, so the community center and the community park where we're located here now, that's that area. You can see it's completely in the 1,000-foot buffer zone. You're going to see a couple of areas that have to be prohibited by natural volition of the process. City Hall or Civic Park, which is not even all the way owned by the city. It's halfway in private ownership. And the police department. So you can see the detriment in terms of availability for city-owned property. We don't have a lot to start with, and we don't really have any that you can make the clear case that there isn't a safety factor involved. Questions on this map before we keep plugging along? I'm kind of throwing a lot of information at you. So essentially, you're going to see that translated onto the ordinance. Riverbend Park, Community Park, Civic Wayside Park, City Hall, Police Department, Public Works, Community Center. Then you're going to see, and by way of reminder, this ordinance has came together by researching 10 to 12 other ones for what other cities are doing. The language from this, the kind of the guts, come from about 8 other ordinances. Then some of the nuts and bolts, mainly from the Newport or the city of Rainier, Rainier being a comparable population to ours. All past ordinances, we were able to glean information from those just to kind of understand what can we do because of this unfunded state mandate. Right? So we pulled that together based on all of those things. So number 4 just kind of runs in concert with that. We are also prohibiting, and I think this is being forgotten by some cities, public rights of way because cars drive on them. So sidewalks would count as a public rights of way because there's a safety threat there. There could be an accident. There could be a number of different things that could happen there that pose a safety threat. Number 5 kind of covers the 1,000-foot buffer for school areas. Number 6 being the floodplain and the regulatory floodway. And then I wanted to highlight B in a different color because, as you can recall, in our workshop, we pose 3 options to be consistent with the state law. Number 1, we can do nothing, and it opens up entire vulnerability. Number 2, we can look at an ordinance like this, and we can regulate time, place, or manner. Or number 3, we can designate a specific location for a camp, and then you can send everyone there. But if you do that, you have to provide bathroom units, amenities, hand washing stations, transition plans, programmatic approaches. All of those things have to be involved when you do that. So a city like ours that doesn't necessarily have the money, we count every penny, to go towards, for example, like we talked about earlier, your sewer rates and the conveyance system, those types of things. For a city like us, we have to look at what a lot of other cities are doing, and that is this, how can we regulate all of our public spaces instead of designating a specific location? So by doing that, the time element really allows us to look at if they're experiencing the issue and they have nowhere else to go and they want to camp down in our public space, we can place a reasonable objective restriction on you can be there from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. or 8 a.m. 8 hours or 10 hours. Right now what this says is at least once every 24 hours. Now, I can only surmise that there's probably a number of people in here that don't want to attack that number because 24 full hours. Essentially, what that does is that prohibits that area of the public space for a full day. That's what it does. Did you have a question?
Yeah. All the exclusions that you had in there, what other space do we have?
That's the point.
That's a great question.
What's the
answer? I'm waiting for you to add.
Okay. As far as I know, there's nothing left.
The
ordinance, if that is indeed the case, is writing out a homeless camp.
The analysis that we did really is kind of consistent with, in terms of the school buffer zones, with the city of Roseburg, what a number. But other cities do 200 feet. They do 500 feet. Or they ignore the floodplain element of it, which does allow some of the public spaces to be available. In order to be consistent with state law, I can only surmise that we are going to have to at least identify some areas for consistency that may potentially be vulnerable. But we further restrict with reasonable limitations the time element of it by virtue of 8 hours or 10 hours instead of 24 hours. And this ordinance hopefully will successfully allow us to protect our public spaces for a time period as long as it takes for the regional approach to become available. Because there are many jurisdictions that feel like it will become available. As right now, you can't. The law says you have to cater to your homeless population in your corporate limits, which doesn't allow a regional approach like all the cities pitching in money to build something in Roseburg and you send them there. That's not available right now. Will it be litigated in the future? It's possible. It's probable. And if that regional approach becomes available, then that is a much more viable solution.
So basically what you're saying is, by this ordinance, if I read it right, it's not going to be very conducive to the politically correct, the on-house, to be in the city, even for 24 hours.
You can make the practical argument that because of school zones and natural features, those types of things, it renders all of our city-owned property unavailable. You can certainly make that. However, this ordinance in its current condition is wound tight all the way to the brim. The point is to come together and tweak it and to try to make it consistent with the provisions of the state legislation. And so whatever that means, if it means pulling back on the school buffer zones, if it means pulling back on a natural feature element, whatever that means, that's what we're contemplating with this. This is very rough, just so we can start talking about it in that regard, see what it looks like.
Without the regional approach to this, all just right back to the unfunded mandates that the state keeps coming up with. In my opinion.
Yes, and we visited this the previous meeting. That's why a lot of cities and cities' attorneys feel like that portion is vulnerable. We have to cater to our homeless population. The confusing thing is that's not really consistent with the definition of being homeless. They don't have a residence. So how are you able to make that argument? So that's where that element is kind of open. So maybe it'll be lifted and we can do that regional approach. And we can come together, multi-jurisdictional. Let's try to figure out a regional approach. Of course, you know Sutherland, they have designated an area. There's a full camp there. If you've ever, so it's by the Lower Young Fields. They're over there, and they have a full program approach on how they're attacking that. And I think they've kind of been pioneers in this area. I think they're the only city in the county that's really contemplated that in that regard.
Now, also, too, is there a restriction for placement within a residential area?
Yes. So there is, I mean, it's mentioned by default, public rights of way adjacent to a lot of parcel containing a dwelling or commercial building. That would include by default pretty much all your residential. There are some areas on easements, but they're probably not city owned.
So would that negate the small piece of city property that is on Brantley?
Brantley's in the floodplain, so if we were using that approach, there's a number of issues that make that practical. Number one, the street leading into it is not city owned. So it's not available open to the public. There are challenges for that piece. We also have a pressure line, a sewer line that goes underneath it. And so that particular property is just not available.
Okay.
So scrolling back down, just to kind of keep talking about this, there are some additional elements in this ordinance that really had to be included that run in concert with House Bill 3115, but also the secondary bill that was introduced, 3124, that has to do with noticing. So if someone is past the time and they really need to vacate because they're past that 24 hours or they're past the 8 hours or whatever time limit that you designate, there's 90.02092 that essentially requires you to post a 72-hour notice, indicating that there will be camp cleanup. You have 3 days to pick it up. If you don't pick it up, it will be cleaned up by, you know, whatever city staff, whatever the city designates, and it'll have to be stored for 30 days. That's kind of the crux of that part. And then there's a removal, storage, and retrieval, which again covers the 30 days, has language in there as it relates to things that sometimes happen peripheral to camping. Anything else, we understand that this bill causes the camping in public spaces to be decriminalized. It's more of a civil and compliance issue now. But there are other things that might be peripheral. None of that is weighed into this. If there are criminal things going on, that gets handled in the normal regard under the purview of the chief of police. It's completely normal.
Just one more question. If you say that it's a 24-hour stay in the camp, how can you give a 72-hour notice for them to clean it up?
They have to leave, and their things will obviously be there longer than that. I mean, there's no overlap there.
Current state law.
So if they leave after 8 hours, they decide to leave all their stuff.
72 their stuff hours later, it's
yes.
Removed.
Yeah.
Okay, got
they,
it.
They
and
have
then stored for 30.
Come back. Yes.
And we could do that at the police station, right?
You have to post it on site.
You're not camping there now. Clarification point.
It's either at the police station or Public Works.
Yeah. Andy has enough trouble. He's been hounded with a lot of stuff, so I'll take some.
A lot of these ordinances have essentially been very PD heavy. I'm not saying that's the way we should do it, but it's been very PD heavy. So circling back, I wanted to bring this map up without the natural features and the buffer zones. It's all the city-owned property. Just for a good takeaway in terms of, you know, we've got a number of public-owned properties that even I was surprised on. We got little easement areas trickled throughout the city and different things like that. The largest properties by far and away being the parks, Riverbend Park, Community Park. These are essentially the areas that get opened up by these bills that do become vulnerable in some regard. Not saying in a negative or positive regard, but these are the properties it applies to.
Sure. Well, thank you, Thomas. Any questions for Mr. McIntosh?
Okay. So a regional approach is in the future.
Well,
I mean,
maybe.
Hopefully,
yeah.
Until then, what is our options as far as, because there's also a mandate out there that if somebody does not have a place to go, when we don't provide a place to go, they can occupy a public property or a campsite, even though we can place time limits on it. They still can find some place in public property to throw their campsite in.
Yeah, exactly. That's what this bill does. It prohibits your ability from trespassing in public spaces for those persons that have the right to sleep somewhere dry and warm. That's what it does. And so, essentially, the regional approach is the most viable approach, but for now, after July 1, if we don't do an ordinance, if we don't do anything, then that's exactly right. Someone could come in, they could say, I am having this issue, I have nothing, you know, they may fit that criteria. And we're not anyone to judge with that criteria, they may fit that criteria. And if that's the case, we don't have an ordinance to at least say, yes, we acknowledge that, but you can only be here during these hours. And by the way, these areas over here are prohibited because there's a safety issue. Then there's no length of time. There's no limitations. There's no restrictions whatsoever to continue to facilitate our parks towards the public. Because they are for the public. They're for the entirety of the public use. And Public Works works very hard, I can attest to that. Their entire crew works very hard to keep the parks and the public-owned properties beautified and perfected. We appreciate all that they do. So, yes, that's exactly what the bill does. And so you have a lot of cities having the same conversation. If we want to place restrictions, what does that look like? What can we do, number one? What do we want to do?
Thank you. Anything else? Anybody else have anything for Thomas? Please approach the, state your name and address. You got 3 minutes.
Thank you. Just wanted to ask a quick question. Susan Friedberger, 162 Teresa Court. My question would be, if we don't have something in place, do we know yet what the sanctions will be coming from the state? I'm going to assume they will be the ones that will be monitoring this because they're the ones driving this in the state of Oregon.
Yeah, so essentially if we do nothing, then that would be option number one. We can certainly do nothing. But we have to look at the crux of what the bill does. The bill doesn't allow us to trespass for those experiencing homelessness or when they have nowhere else to go. So what would happen is if you don't pass something, then there's no limitation on length of time they can stay in the public places. There's no regulations. There's nothing sensible in place that would allow us to acknowledge that situation, but also protect the integrity in some method of our public spaces. I don't know if that answers you.
It did. Thank you.
This will give the police department some teeth to assist on dealing with it. The problem that I have with this is that the state put this in place, and it's not a one-size-fits-all, okay? I've worked in this community for 27 years. I know where the homeless camps are. They're not in Winston. You know where they're at? They're underneath the bridges. They're in the county area, and I hate to bring them to the communities because anywhere we put them is going to be a problem, and that's my frustrating part on it. We'll do our piece. We'll do the best that we can. We'll manage it with our city, Andy's crew, like I was telling him earlier. They always keep an eye on what's going on in the park. Let us know for the 72-hour piece. We do have a code guy that's going to help on that. So we're going to make it work. We'll make it happen. We've got a good team on that. But that being said, that's my frustrating part with the state, just so you know.
Thank you. Anybody else like to approach? Please.
So I'm Greg Hale, and I live at 155 Brantley, right next to the city lot that I've been taking care of for the last 20-plus years. So, I mean, I know that's not in the system right now or whatever, but we're already dealing with the homelessness across the river at all times of the night, screaming, yelling, cutting trees down in the middle of the night. There's no way I don't want them right next door to me. I already got to deal with them across the river. So what I'm suggesting is maybe talk to the state, that state-owned property right next to the bridge where they're already living at, right, and annex that into Winston if we can. Well, I'm just saying, it's already there. You guys, they're already dealing with them all the time. I know half of it's tribal, and I know half of it's owned by the state. I got that at MAPS. So I know they bounce from place to place. So they already know the system. That's where they're going to be at anyway. That's where they want to be at because they can get around it. So I don't know why we can't talk with the state since they're the one enforcing these laws and maybe do something like that.
See, this is we're back to the issue a little bit ago about unfunded mandates.
I know.
They want us to deal with this, but they're not going to give us any real good way to go about it. Where you live, the deal up on Brantley, it's in the floodplain. It doesn't qualify as a homeless camp. You're not going to have to. I don't believe at this juncture that's going to be an issue for you.
No, I mean that's fine, Danny. I just like I said, we're a tight-knit community in that area. I mean, everybody, and, you know, we already got to deal with that. Everybody keeps an eye out, so it's bad enough across the river, so I just wanted to say my spiel. So.
Great. Thank you very much.
Mayor, just to give further volition on that, so if it weren't in the floodplain, it still wouldn't be a possibility simply by the fact that it's not adjacent to a public right-of-way. You're off an easement, it's privately owned, and really, technically, only the property owners that it serves has access. It's not for the general public, the access down in there. I believe it's only a 20-footer, isn't it, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, the side they fill it in, so really it's only between my posts, like 10 feet.
10 feet?
I put my posts back in, yeah.
Yeah, so there are other challenges in there that would disqualify, but a lot of cities are doing essentially the same thing. They are prohibiting very dense residential areas for that reason, because it doesn't. If you're going to designate an area, it doesn't make any sense to put it, tuck it away in a highly dense residential area.
Anybody else like to have 3 minutes of fame? There you are.
Barbara Schreckengast, I live at 335 Pintale Avenue. If we put in an ordinance for the time limit, can you also put in a limit for the number that can be in any one park?
I don't know. That hasn't been talked about in any sense of the research. There hasn't been a number or prohibition on or threshold by any ordinance I've seen from other cities. I can understand the reasoning there because, you know, if we were looking at something like that, we would want.
Thomas, wasn't there something somewhere that we talked about that had a 10 by 10 size campsite was the minimum, and that was for whoever?
Yeah, so that's the criteria the state gave to gauge the funding that might be needed from cities. So that's the criteria they gave. So we handed that over, and I made out a conceptual plan on how that would look, and it would require a 3-acre piece with lots of different amenities and several camping spaces.
Well, a 10 by 10 square foot would somewhat restrict the amount of people that could be there, depending on the size of 10 by 10 size.
Okay, thank you.
Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Do you have anything else?
Yeah.
Great, thank you. Anybody else? Going once, going twice. Okay, on to the next subject. Thank you much, Thomas. Appreciate that. On agenda items from council, any of y'all have anything you want to talk about?
Mr. Mayor, we need 7E.
I'm sorry. Chief.
Yes, sir.
This is a big deal.
So one of my officers was dispatched to a injury accident where a juvenile lost his leg just right out here. When he arrived on scene, I was coming in and I heard him go there, not knowing the situation and what was going on. When I arrived on scene, I can tell that something was bad. Didn't know what it was. I saw it, you know, I've been to many accidents, nothing big. When I saw the look on the officer's face, and him coming to me and asking me, you know, what do I need to do next? And I was sitting there thinking, well, and I was playing the sergeant that day too, so I was sitting there going, okay, so what do we got going on here? And I'm starting to go through my spiel of everything that we need to do on a traffic crash and how serious it is. He told me, he goes, hey, Chief, I need a tourniquet. And I'm like, okay, we'll get to the tourniquet. We'll do that. Just figure out what's going on. I pulled one of the fire guys aside, and I said, hey, what's happening? And he told me, well, the kid lost his leg in the road, and the officer was assisting on that. And then things started coming together for me, and I realized, wow, he was on a pretty dramatic incident. Shortly after that, I helped him out. We got everything kind of taken care of. And later on that day, I got a call from OHSU, a doctor. The doctor said, hey, we want to give a big shout out to the officer that put the tourniquet on the juvenile's leg. And I go, okay. And he goes, he saved his life. I just wanted you to know that. I said, okay, thank you. So that being said, I started doing a little bit more digging, and years ago when I got an award, we went through the Officers Hall of Fame, and I started looking at that, and I found a area where I can submit him for a life-saving award. And so that's what I did.
Patrick.
Front center.
So this is the Police Officers Hall of Fame Life-Saving Award. It's presented to Officer Patrick Wright, who's now a senior officer. He doesn't have the stripes on there, but I'm impressed that he got a tie and all that. I'm proud of him. It says, in recognition of your unselfish actions during an emergency situation which resulted in the saving of a human life, your proper application of training, experience, and equipment exemplifies your dedication to duty, to the preservation of life, and to the service of your community. Congratulations. This is your setup for your IC jacket, for your uniform.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Awesome.
Thank you, Patrick.
All right, Patrick.
Okay, non-agenda items from council. Top that.
Are you kidding me? No way.
Okay, thank you very much. Congratulations, Patrick. Good job. Well done. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Upcoming agenda items? Nothing. Go to the order. Check copies were in our packet on the computer. Claims in excess of $500. Announcements. Urban Renewal Agency, April 20th, City Hall canceled.
Yes.
Oktoberfest Committee, April 27th at 5 in City Hall. City Council, May 1st. 7 p.m. Probably back in chambers at that point. We'll have to alert you if anything big's coming. Park Board, May 9th, that's 4 o'clock, City Hall.
Correct.
And Economic Development, May 10th at noon at the City Hall. And if there's not an executive session, thank you and good night.
Meeting adjourned at 8:12.